Welcome back to the Psychedelic Spotlight Podcast. I am your host, David Flores, CEO of Global Track Solutions. And joining me here today is Timothy Koh. He is the CEO of Entheon Biomedical. You can find them on the Canadian Securities Exchange under the ticker symbol ENBI, and now on the OTCQB under the symbol ENTBF. Timothy, it is a pleasure to have you joining me here today. How are you doing?
I'm great. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I'm very excited and certainly looking forward to learning more about Entheon Biomedical, specifically because the core focus here of the company is on developing solutions associated with addiction. And of course, it's no secret that we are in the midst of a very serious addiction crisis on a global scale. This is also a matter very close to me personally, given the fact that I had lost my father to addiction back in 2018. So I've seen with my own eyes the shortcomings and the failures of the current healthcare system and more conventional treatments designed to treat addiction. So I'm very, very interested in diving a little deeper into what the company is focused on developing here. But before we dive in, would you like to just give us a brief overview of who the company is and what specifically it's focused on?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity. So Entheon Biomedical is obviously, as David mentioned, focused on the addiction space, really addressing some of the unmet needs that are currently being unaddressed by conventional means of treatment. So the molecule that we're focused on using is dimethyltryptamine, otherwise known as DMT, commonly found in things like ayahuasca. I'm sure your audience is fully aware of where that comes from and what it does. Part of the reason why we're focusing on DMT is obviously due to, you know, I think there's a lot of mystique around DMT. It's often referred to as the God molecule and sort of largely associated with really bizarre types of experiences. But it is a classical 5-HT2A serotonin psychedelic, sort of serotonin, serotonergic psychedelic. And so part of the reason why we're so interested in DMT is that we understand that DMT can be administered at dosage levels that are reminiscent or similar to, 5 grams, 7 grams of psilocybin. And we all understand, I think, that, you know, there is a specific dose range or level of psychedelic immersion that is key to facilitating some of these introspectively important types of experiences, you know, unlocking that ability for us to introspect and to really address some of the, I guess, cordoned off areas that are implicitly sort of linked to what some of our barriers and limitations are. In the realm of depression, you know, it allows the individual to explore some of their narrative features, traumas, and certain areas of resistance or difficulty that, you know, of your own consciously directed thought, you're unable to. The key benefit of DMT is that, you know, we all understand that some of the longer form classical psychedelics have an effective range of or effective window of anywhere from between 4 to 6 to 8 hours, depending on the dosage and which molecule you're using. DMT, on the other hand, is a very powerful but short acting molecule. And so, you know, we understand that psilocybin and other psychedelics are largely safe, but, you know, within that long form experience, you know, there are opportunities for potentially overly difficult or at the very least therapeutically non-useful experiences to take place. I often equate it to a solid state rocket. The size of the rocket, once you light the fuse, it is going as fast and as long as the rocket has to say. And so that's some of the more classic forms of psychedelics. DMT, on the other hand, I do equate to a liquid fuel rocket where you have the potential to modulate the pace, the intensity, and the distance that you go due to the fact that the effective half-life of it renders it sort of completely cleared from your body within 15 minutes from the cessation of dose. So from a safety perspective, once we do get this out into the thousands of potentially millions, that potential for negative adverse reaction where the profundity of the experience is just too much does lend itself to the possibility of negative adverse reaction. So DMT has the capacity to be, you know, utilized in such a way that if someone says, hey, I'm not really ready to confront these foundationally important features of my life, we can stop the experience if it proves to be too much. We also have the ability to create a more, I guess, flexible program design, as opposed to just being reliant on one high impact psychedelic scenario. Because we can structure in a multitude of shorter sessions of varying intensity and duration, we have the ability to, or we enable the physician or attending a psychiatrist to create module-based therapeutic programs where you don't necessarily need to confront all of the person's internal composition in one fell swoop, but rather can approach it in a targeted kind of way, sort of ticking off certain elements progressively and integrating them over time, as opposed to just being reliant on one done and let's unpack everything all at once.
Yeah, very fascinating. I mean, it seems that there's a focus on really helping to make DMT and its use here for therapeutic, you know, purposes very patient friendly, which I know when I speak to people and I talk to them about how psychedelics will potentially be, you know, incorporated into clinical settings, making them patient friendly is very important. You touched a little bit on it, but do you want to elaborate a little bit more on sort of how the company is focused on sort of leveraging DMT, making it patient friendly, and, you know, maybe what is some of the research and you know, what you guys are doing right now? What is it sort of uncovering? What are you finding right now in terms of its efficacy in being utilized as a treatment for addiction?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're aware that psychedelics in general have been used, you know, at least clinically or within research context, for the treatment of a variety of things. Some of the work that our advisor, Matthew Johnson, has done has demonstrated that for the purposes of nicotine cessation, smoking, which is a massive, you know, mortality driver within the world, that the quit rate for people that undertake a psilocybin-based program is in the 60-70% range, which far outstrips anything like a nicotine patch or even things like, you know, Champix and other pharmacological interventions does. So, you know, part of our focus is directing that the capacity of psychedelics to, you know, take on a multitude of addictions, you know, not just the, you know, hugely profound difficulty that is an opiate addiction or a alcoholism addiction, but also anything that is underpinned by that really interesting and complex milieu of psychological and emotional issues that underpins things like motivation, distress tolerance, et cetera. So we see applications for DMT, not only in, you know, the sort of classic, you know, molecules of abuse like nicotine, opiates and alcohol, but also potentially for more behavioral addictions, whether it's a sex addiction or addictions to food. You know, really, I think DMT is a great modulator of default mode network and sort of that underlying base response set that we have. You know, even unaffected individuals have. You know, we all to some extent operate on autopilot, but for those afflicted with addiction-related issues, that autopilot can form a worldview and a belief set that ultimately results in behaviors that try to mitigate the distress related to that worldview. So we think that DMT, through its action on entropy within the default mode network, has the capacity to drastically reset, not just you know, like a substance-related addictions, but also behavioral addictions. So that's some of the work that we're trying to prove out. Obviously, our first study is going to be safety-focused, but I guess segueing into some of our other areas of investigation, we're also interested in not just the pharmacological, but also looking at other things like neurophysiology. And so seeing if there are any distinct characteristics to those psychedelic experiences that are indicative of the therapeutic component. So we've recently engaged in a data sharing exercise with a well-known research college that, you know, we're sharing information with regard to the DMT experience and really trying to parse out what constitutes that DMT state and then teasing out what of that state is potentially beneficial so that we can inform our understanding of the models that are attached to these drug states, and then teasing out those biomarkers so that if there is the opportunity for modulating dosage, setting, or psychiatrist intervention, we can nudge the experience to the direction of the optimal and the biomarkers that are indicated as being therapeutic. So not just safety, not just pharmacology, but also interested in biometrics, as well as I think we'll get there, genetics, and seeing what multifactorial sort of composition goes into affecting someone's appropriateness to use certain psychedelics, because ultimately our duty of care is not only to those people that meet the threshold of appropriateness for DMT, but, you know, the sort of philosophy that we have here is that ultimately, the people that are brave enough to embark on this next step of wellness, whether it is surmounting a set of barriers that are inhibiting them from enjoying their lives, or from, you know, evading what is potentially a fatal mental health indication. Ultimately, our duty of care is to facilitating the safe and appropriate use of psychedelics to help those people. And so we're working on developing tools, not just within DMT, but to service that larger diagnostic and safety space as well.
Great. And I think, you know, that that ties into a little bit of what my next question is here, you know, and that is the recent news and recent in the last few weeks here, the company announced the launch of the Halogen Psychedelics Genetic Test, which the company states is the industry's first psychedelics genetic test kit and developed by your wholly owned subsidiary, Halogen Life Sciences, Inc. Want to dive into this. You know, I think the whole, you know, idea of a psychedelics genetic test kit is certainly very fascinating. So can you share a little bit about what specifically it is and how all of this sort of ties into the bigger picture here and what you guys are focused on?
Yeah, totally. Like I mentioned, I think, you know, our duty of care is to anyone that is embarking on psychedelics. And though we know them to be safe, there are certain risk factors associated with psychedelics. We do know that there are certain propensities for people that have underlying psychiatric predispositions to potentially develop things like schizophrenia and psychosis as a result of interaction with certain molecules. And so what we understand from the genetics perspective, that there are genetic factors that will dictate whether a person has a strong or a weak response to psychedelics. There are metabolic factors that dictate whether a person is a fast metabolizer of certain molecules or a slow metabolizer of a certain molecule, which will result in ultimately when a dose is administered, that person that is a slow metabolizer may have a profoundly overwhelming experience or an experience that was not intended to be had, and thereby, you know, sort of potentially, you know, not arriving in the therapeutically useful place, but also arriving in a place that is non-therapeutically useful. And then we also understand that there are biomarkers that indicate propensities for some of these psychiatric disorders. So, you know, this tool is meant to be informative for the market as it evolves. Ultimately, you know, our focus from a clinical perspective is DMT, but we understand that the emerging and evolving psychedelic landscape over the next 4, 5, 6, 10 years is going to be inclusive of a multitude of molecules. So individuals and physicians will be armed with making very important choices. Ultimately, people, we are presuming, will be on the threshold of making a very important drug intake decision. And so we want to arm them with the information basis that they could use to make safe and informed decisions. So whether it is a decision made between, you know, seeking out ketamine treatment or psilocybin treatment, we want to give them a tool that will add color to hopefully a physician-informed decision, but provide them with a basis so that they can say, well, with more confidence, I can enter into a conversation saying I'm at that threshold where I want to get better, and the information that I've gleaned suggests that I do this, and go proceed to undertake the additional sort of diligence and, I guess, personal scrutiny with that medical professional to lead them to what we hope is, you know, making use of or capitalizing on that willingness, because willingness is one of the most important things in this world. You know, without willingness, we don't make those decisions. So in that very rarefied moment of willingness, we want to ensure that the person has as much information as they can to make those informed choices. And so, yeah, that the test kit as it stands is direct to consumer, is meant to inform them to direct their approach with regard to medical psychedelic treatment. But we're looking to expand that and just keep your ears open to see how that develops to make it a more broad and encompassing thing that is more medically directed. Still early stages at this point, but we are very interested in expanding the scope of that inquiry to be more comprehensive and definitive. So, yeah.
Well, I think it's an excellent approach. Do you want to share a little bit about your own professional background and experience and perhaps maybe the road that led you to becoming involved here with Entheon Biomedical?
Yeah, totally. You know, just a pretty standard entrepreneur story, I guess. I was always interested in business, and at a pretty early age, I helped run some family businesses in the service and investment space. meager stuff, but like gave me a lot of insights into what functionally is required to run a business. And then my schooling took me a lot of places. At one point, I wanted to be a poet and a philosopher and in social sciences. So I studied a variety of things like psychology and sociology. But really I was interested in the human condition. And so most of my writing and portfolio writing that I did was focused on examinations of my own quirks as a human, I guess. And then, of course, as luck would have it, I found myself working within the investor relations space. So understanding, you know, the composition of markets and the sort of narratives that exist there. And then I found myself, the more that I dealt with the sort of conventional business models, really finding myself interested in disruptive technologies. And so I started a blockchain venture 4 or 5 years ago at this point, building protocols on the Ethereum network that would enable, permissioned fund release from stakeholders that contribute into these crypto funds and give them some say as to the fund utilization. As that story progressed, the most pivotal moment in my professional career was actually the loss of my brother. I lost my brother to an opiate overdose in March of 2019. It really reframed what my intentions in life are. You know, disruption is great. If you can make money easier to use and sort of give people extra points on their investments and things like that, amazing. But then I guess with the loss of my brother, it was a really sort of intimate struggle. I was essentially responsible for my brother's care. I was effectively his guardian in some sense. My brother was an addict for over 2 decades, suffered a lot of traumas and the sort of enduring trauma of being a drug addict in a way that was unaddressed for 2 years. About 2 years prior to his passing, my parents just were at wit's end. They're in their 60s and 70s, and they didn't know what was enabling, helping, or hurting. And me personally, having gone through my own, mental health difficulties and triumphs, they thought I'd be the sort of most apt person to help them. And so, I tried with every fiber of my brain and body to find him the right professionals and institutions and medications. And, over the course of 2 years, it was a real case study in the limitations of institutions. So not the medical professionals, but the tools that they had and the medications that were layered on my brother. And like, sadly, I lost my brother in March of 2019. And that really shook me. And my own personal experiences with psychedelics really informed, my wish that pervaded or existed during my whole interaction with my brother, saying like, I really wish there was a way that I could get my brother out of this treatment center and, in a safe setting where I knew medically he could benefit from psychedelics, but those options just didn't exist. And I wasn't about to give him a tab of acid or anything. And then in losing my brother, like that, I guess that love of the disruptive, like sort of merged with my understanding of the unmet needs that existed within the addiction space. And yeah, it really sort of synthesized where, I guess in my own personal evolution as a human, like, and my interest in what the nature of humanity and suffering, I thought like, well, there's no more fitting place to really synthesize all of my concerns about what it means to be human, what it means to suffer, and what it means to experience joy than in this place where we could potentially come up with hugely disruptive strategies and products to help people experience joy and to, mitigate their suffering and to really unlock that genius that we all possess with regard to ourselves and what makes us joyous and happy and free. And so that really kicked off a pretty feverish undertaking where, understanding my own limitations, I said, well, we've got to get the smartest people in the world into a room together. And so pretty rapidly we struck out and, started aggregating some of the names that you see on our advisory board from places like Johns Hopkins and Imperial College of London to really validate like, hey, do psychedelics help people that suffer from addiction? If so, what molecules to use? Okay, this molecule, how do we administer it? And how do we structure the therapies around it in such a way that can be affecting and really can foundationally alter someone's internal composition to the extent that they, can suddenly come up for air and start swimming. So yeah, it was a hugely difficult experience, but it did really catalyze my beliefs around what's important to pursue in life. And so I guess that's brought us here to me talking to you today.
Yeah, you know, and the unfortunate truth is stories, you know, and experiences like what you went through with your brother, what I've gone through with my father, just far too common. And it just continues to lend to how important the work that companies like yourself, you know, are involved in here, really trying to break through those barriers and find therapies and treatments that actually work. I think there is this understanding that there are a ton of shortcomings, you know, when it comes to treatments for just a wide range of mental health conditions, not just addiction. So I, you know, I want to thank you for sharing that story. And, you know, with that, I just want to pivot ever so slightly here and maybe focus a little more here on the corporate side of things. You mentioned your experience in the investor relations world. And so I think that ties in, you know, a lot to, you know, a lot of that knowledge that's necessary to run a publicly traded company here. And so, you know, I know that today, as we're recording this May the 5th, the company announced its listing here on the OTCQB. I would imagine a strategic decision here for the company, but do you want to share a little bit about the decision behind this to move to the OTCQB here?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, obviously the audience and potential U.S. investment audience is a massively important thing for us to consider. And so, you know, we were previously listed on the Pink Sheets and, you know, getting that further level of validation that enables, you know, U.S. brokerage interaction is super important to us. And so, you know, we understand that, you know, what really moves markets is the inclusion of the U.S. investor base to really get a broad number of stakeholders into the story. And so, with some of our, you know, I guess, corporate initiatives going into the United States with regard to our halogen sales, you know, we are on the verge of announcing a U.S. side sales campaign, really leveraging the markets that exist out there. From a population perspective, we see that as a huge revenue opportunity. And then just from a sort of investor perspective as well, really understanding that, you know, also from a need perspective, right? Like, the US is, I think, you know, comparable, if not, you know, in a more urgent or acute state of understanding the, I guess, immensity and the importance of the unmet addiction crisis right now. So I think, you know, the relevance of what we're trying to do, we really do think will hit home with the US. You know, as they're also in the grips of, or not you guys particularly, but, you know, as North America is in the grips of a massive mental health and addictions problem. So, you know, we do think that our story will resonate down there and already fielding quite a bit of interest. And so that threshold of giving them increased investor access, really do hope will catalyze a few things for us on the corporate side.
Most definitely. And Timothy, before I let you go, you know, I know that there's a increase in interest, you know, throughout the investor community, as well as, you know, in the public market sector, and really taking a look at the psychedelic space right now. And there are seemed more and more companies now starting to sprout up throughout this space and throughout this industry. With that in mind, if, you know, if you wanted to share, you know, something with folks that are out there in the investment community, perhaps taking a look at Entheon Biomedical, what would you want to share with them in terms of, you know, your thoughts as to why, you know, you believe real potential does exist here from a value perspective for the company going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I guess the value proposition that Entheon posits itself on is not just one-dimensional. I think there is a huge value case to be made with regard to DMT for the purposes of treating addiction. You know, some of the elements that we covered, sort of, you know, the customizable, sort of flexible program design, increased safety, the ability to titrate stop, to avoid potential insurance uh-ohs that happen as a result of someone having an experience that is detrimental to them, you know, a very strong clinical program. But then the other component is that, you know, Entheon isn't necessarily just reliant on DMT for its potential future revenue. You know, for us, we've also identified a emerging need that is growing as the psychedelic, you know, sector grows. And that is around how do we help individuals and physicians inform safe and responsible drug prescription. So, we've also identified that, and identified that as it relates to our duty of care to individuals that are embarking on this type of work. We've also targeted revenue opportunities in this or near and middle term that we're very eager to continue to develop on. So, I think we have two base positions upon which the value can be expected. One is the differential value of TMT. And then the other is, developing tools that we find or that we hope will be broadly applicable and have utility for the psychedelic industry as it expands from now into, the decades that proceed.
Yeah, most definitely. And, I think there's no question the potential certainly exists here. And I think you guys have done a terrific job, at least in my opinion here, of really positioning yourselves quite effectively here in this new and emerging space. And so with that, Timothy, I want to thank you again for taking time to join us here today. We'll make sure we get the company's website information included here in this podcast. But I look forward to continuing to follow the progress here of Entheon Biomedical. But again, thank you, Timothy. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. And thank you for sharing with me.
Great. Thank you so much.
Global Track Solutions, Inc. and Psychedelic Spotlight does not in any way encourage or condone the use, purchase, sale, or transfer of any illegal substances, nor do we encourage or condone partaking in any unlawful activities. We support a harm reduction approach for the purpose of education and promoting individual and public safety. If you are choosing to use psychedelic substances, please do so responsibly. The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the Psychedelic Spotlight podcast are those of their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Psychedelic Spotlight and Global Track Solutions, Inc.